Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily and sometimes more than daily podcast. So, the confidence vote in Theresa May is looming, and the Prime Minister has just given what, in theory, could be one of her last PMQs. She had her husband, Philip May, in the gallery to watch her. And in the post-PMQs huddle after, the Prime Minister's spokesman had a message that took some hacks by surprise. What was it, Isabel?
Well, he basically said that Theresa May doesn't see this vote as being about who leads the Conservative Party into the next general election. And this is basically a squeeze message for those Tory MPs who support Theresa May staying in place now, but are worried that if they give her their support this evening, she'll see it as a mandate to go on and sort of plan her next 10 years worth of elections, as opposed to accepting that her sell-by date may be not today, but it should be in the next year.
And James, as you pointed out, this is a different message than one we've heard from Theresa May before, when she has appeared to suggest that she does have an intention of fighting the next election.
Yes, when straight after a general election that went so wrong for her, Theresa May came to the 1922 committee and said, I got us into this mess, I'll get us out of it, and I'll only stay as leader as long as you want me. In other words, when you tell me to go, I'll go. But then on a trip to Japan later in 2017, she indicated that she wanted to fight the next general election. I think what the heavy hint from number 10 that she won't fight the next election is designed to do is to say to the large, I mean, I'd say the medium position of Tory MPs is, don't get rid of her now, but they would like her to go very soon after March 29th this year, so that there's a new Prime Minister in place to deal with the second round of the Brexit negotiations that will start once there's a new European Commission in place after the European elections, and a new leader for party conference to kind of try and give the party a kind of fresh post this bit of Brexit start. They are trying to say to those people, you will get your way. I think it is very telling that this gambit is being deployed now. It suggests that despite the fact that the public pledges from Tory MPs that they're backing her is now over the number required to win, that there is still enough concern within Theresa May's political operation about the numbers who are going to vote against her, that, as Isabel said, they feel need to deploy this kind of squeeze message on marginal voters. It suggests to me that they are, when they are calling round, they're getting quite a lot of, yes, I'm going to vote for her tonight, but don't think that that means I want her to go on and on. I thought the one bum note she hit in her statement this morning was it sounded like she wanted to stay as Tory leader forever. You know, the joke during the rounds on Tory MPs was, you know, Gavin Barr was already planning the 2034 general election strategy. I mean, what this is trying to say is, I will go, but let me deal with Brexit. And I mean, there are a lot of people who see the benefits of letting her essentially be a scapegoat. Let her get this deal through and then let her go and take the sins of a deal with her. And then it'll be someone else can come and try and put the party back together again afterwards.
Isabel, do you think this would be enough of a convincing message to pick up those MPs who aren't particularly noisy, haven't come out yet to say what they think, currently mulling over their options?
Probably, yes. And another thing that I've picked up that is convincing MPs to support her is that they're really angry with the way in which those on the other side are trying to whip this operation. I've received a couple of complaints from MPs, particularly women MPs, actually, about the heavy-handed or foul language that's being used in some of the WhatsApp groups in the Conservative Party about removing Theresa May today. And I think it's put some of them off because they feel that there's a perhaps a sort of a nasty streak, maybe even a bullying operation underway here. And that only works for a certain type of politician. Some MPs, I have to say, particularly women, find that quite off-putting.
And we're yet to have any, you could call them big players, or perhaps the beasts of Westminster come out really and say that MPs should get behind this and get rid of it. If you think about this leadership hopefuls, the people who have spoken up, Boris Johnson, Dominic Raab, perhaps David Davis, none of them yet have really done that rallying cry. Do you think that's something we can expect this afternoon, James? Or do you think everyone is just keeping their powder dry to see what the mood is like?
I mean, David Davis has come the kind of closest to that with his talk of a reset on the negotiations. I don't think anyone is going to kind of come out publicly and say, come on, everyone, over the top. Because, you know, there is this old adage in Tory politics that he who wields the knife never wears the crown. So I don't think you'll see that. And it's also worth remembering that I don't think any of those three have said that they've sent a letter in.
And Isabel, when it came to PMQs today, we had Theresa May gave a fairly confident performance, it's safe to say. Do you think that Jeremy Corbyn managed to really seize the opportunity of a Prime Minister who could be out of a job quite soon?
No, it is extraordinary. The government is on the ropes, yet Jeremy Corbyn, and I have to say Ian Blackford, didn't really make those ropes any more perilous for Theresa May. It was partly the tone that Jeremy Corbyn took, which was this kind of, I am so angry tone that he uses, where he just shouts for six questions across the chamber. But also he didn't really paint the government in quite the sort of disastrous terms that he could have done. It can't get its business through the House of Commons, not just on Brexit, but on lots of other measures where it just doesn't have the bandwidth to work, for instance, on social care or domestic abuse, two issues that it was supposed to be publishing legislation or green papers on this autumn. Well, we're a week and a half away from Christmas recess and there's no sign of either of those things yet. And yet he doesn't mention that sort of dysfunctionality. He could have really ridiculed the government and ridiculed its inability to do all of these things and its complete shambles and the way in which everything fluctuates from hour to hour. But instead, he went for shouty campaign mode, which just didn't work today.
And James, did you think this felt like it was the Prime Minister's last PMQs?
I don't think it felt like that. I mean, obviously, having Philip May, her spouse, in the gallery, you know, suggests that, you know, the high stakes involved. It didn't feel like that. And I thought that, I mean, look, obviously, your MPs not having confidence in you is a difficult subject for Jeremy Corbyn. I think you could tell that he didn't want to go there because he would have been walking into an elephant trap, that she would have been able to say, well, whatever happens tonight, I'm going to have more MPs with confidence in me than they have in you, even if I lose, almost, given the numbers. I thought that you could see the extent to which Jeremy Corbyn helped her out, actually, when she had this appalling joke about Barry Gardiner being the unconstant gardener. And if she, and the joke had clearly bombed in the chamber. Not even Michael Ellis, who was
doing a delayed laugh on that one, didn't he?
Yeah, delayed
laugh in the gallery as well. No,
that joke had fallen, you know, flatter than a pancake, and yet Jeremy Corbyn helped her out of a hole because he carried on looking puzzled and mystified with these exaggerated facial expressions so that Theresa May could talk to him like kind of the, you know, say, don't worry, someone will explain it to you later. And at that point, the House laughed because the joke flipped back onto Jeremy Corbyn. You know, and I think this is the kind of, he is the gift that keeps on giving for her. You know, you do constantly find yourself wondering what a better House of Commons performer would do, as Isabel said, to a Prime Minister in this predicament, in this situation. But I also thought, which is why I think a second referendum is becoming ever more likely, you looked at the Tory party in that chamber today and it was two parties. You know, when Ken Clark got up and said, this is a massive act of self-indulgence, how can anyone do this? You know, I would say, from where I was looking, it looked like about two-thirds of the Tory benches cheered quite vocally. Another third sat ostentatiously, with ostentatious quietude. And I think this is the challenge, which is, how do you get the votes to pass this withdrawal agreement? And I think you also then saw from the Labour benches the other challenge to getting this thing through, which is some of the people who you might have thought of back in the day as people who might have backed a kind of EEA, Norway plus style solution to the problem, they now want a second referendum. And so I just struggle to see, if this thing can't get through, where she can pivot to, given that she's not going to do no deal, where she can pivot to that isn't a second referendum.
But perhaps one of the more tricky points for Theresa May in that session as well was the fact that she was pressed a number of times on what progress she was making in trying to get, you know, help from Brussels or have her deal changed. And it did seem that she didn't really have much, if anything, that she could give to MPs.
No, because her meetings yesterday with the EU leaders basically consisted of those leaders saying, we want to help you find a way to get this through Parliament, but we're not going to reopen the deal to renegotiate the withdrawal agreement and so on. And in a sense, actually, the fact that she's had to cancel her visit to Dublin today is quite helpful for her, because she can say, well, you know, I had people in my party who were too busy trying to distract us all from the important negotiations that I was trying to do, and this has made it much more difficult for me to have the meetings and for European leaders to look with respect upon the British Parliament, which is the block to this deal going forward.
I do think these European leaders are been remarkably unhelpful, even in symbolic ways, to Theresa May. I thought they could maybe suggest that they'd had, you know, intense conversations with her. You know, I thought there was a moment when you saw when she got stuck in the car in Berlin because someone had flipped the child lockdown, so she couldn't get out to see Angela Merkel. Angela Merkel could have changed the dynamic of that moment by coming towards Theresa May, giving her a big hug as she got out of a car. Instead, she stayed quite far up the red carpet, so Theresa May had to kind of get out of the car and walk to her. And then there wasn't a particularly warm grip and grin. And I think this is this is what people in Downing Street say privately is the problem, which is all of these European leaders think that if Theresa May can't get this deal through, it'll either be a softer Brexit that ends up going through the House of Commons, or there'll be a second referendum, which they all think is a slam dunk for Remain. I think in a weird way, Theresa May needs them to get a bit more worried that something unexpected might happen, that no deal might come back onto the table somehow. Because, you know, we all remember from a previous European summit, the one where, I can't remember which one it was, when they said that, you know, her weakness was her strength. Basically, they all suddenly thought, oh my word, we're going to end up negotiating with one of these people who we really don't like, you know, Boris Johnson or something like that. So actually, we're going to help her out here a bit to get her through this moment. She needs some of that feeling to return if she's going to get anywhere like near enough on the backstop to be able to say to people, look, I have actually rattled the cage and got a little bit more.
But if she does, as you know, her allies are currently predicting, manage to win this confidence vote, doesn't that send the completely opposite message to Brussels?
I don't think she will win this confidence vote by such a margin that the parliamentary maths and path for this deal will suddenly become straightforward.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Isabel. And do join us again this evening when we are bringing in the news from that confidence vote and all the twists that follow.